My name is Leonard de Jong. I'm the CEO of Another Star, formerly known as Citizen M Hotels, and this is my SMAC episode.
Welcome to a new episode of SMAC. This episode is brought to you by our friends from Winnow, the AI food waste wizards who are tracking every scrap and saving chefs serious cash. My name is Florian Montag, and in this episode, I spoke with Leonard de Jong, CEO of Another Star and longtime Citizen M leader, about the Marriott acquisition and how strong foundation in people, technology, and processes enabled a smooth integration. We discussed how AI is reshaping competition in hospitality and why hotel groups and loyalty programs may have an edge over OTAs. And we wrapped up by looking ahead to what's next with Another Star and reflecting on the early Citizen M years. If you like what we do, then like and share your thoughts on this episode, follow SMAC for more, and enjoy the show. Leonard, it's great to have you on the show. We know each other, and I know you from your Citizen M times for quite some time, always had a big admiration for Citizen M and the brand. Thanks so much for joining us on the SMAC Hospitality Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Florian.
You had definitely an eventful 2025, and we want to talk about it, learn more about what you've been up to since you joined Citizen M again in 2024 with two major transitions which you drove forward. On the one side, of course, the sale and integration of Citizen M to Marriott. And at the same time, or as a result of that, also launching Another Star as a white label operator. Leonard, can you walk us through this decision strategically from you, from Citizen M as a company, not just kind of as a single business move of this transaction, but why did you guys see that this is the right move in terms of a larger vision for the company?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, first of all, those two things are really connected, right? So the fact that we relaunched our, you know, owning a management company as Another Star has to do with the fact that we sold our brand to Marriott. But let's go to, you know, that vision for a moment. So the reason we've sold our brand to Marriott is twofold. You know, first of all, we've been always owning and operating, which has led to a very stable, but, you know, some people would call it a slow rollout of Citizen M in all the key cities of the world. But it never really allowed a third party operator to, you know, start up a Citizen M. If you sell your brand to a big hotel company, all of a sudden you give them the copyrights to do so. So we're going to see more Citizen M's in, you know, different parts of the world by having Marriott, you know, lead this development. And so that's one. The scaling of Citizen M goes to the next level. We brought it to those, you know, almost 40 hotels. Now it's time for it to go faster. You know, the second bit is really solving a problem that we've had ourselves for quite some time on the distribution side, which is, you know, having access to frequent travelers. As you know, Citizen M stands for mobile citizens, people to travel frequently. You know, people talk a lot about the loyalty programs, but the fact is that if you are in the big cities of the world and you're depending on those frequent travelers, being part of Bonvoy is extremely powerful. So we definitely wanted to be part of Bonvoy, especially since, you know, the early days when we were the kings of Booking.com and Booking.com were the kings of Google. Those days are gone, right? So the OTAs have really, you know, taken over, you know, the long tail, you know, people's apartments, short-term rental. It's, you know, created an erosion on the listing of the OTAs, and that's not the fight that we wanted to play long-term. So, you know, better to be associated with the most frequent travelers of the world through Bonvoy, you know, than to, you know, fight for the breadcrumbs on the OTAs, if you exaggerate it a little bit. So those are the two main reasons for us to sell the brand. And then, yeah, if you sell your brand and you still own and operate hotels, you've got to find a new name for that company that remains. And in our case, you know, that's called Another Star. I think most of you read the reasoning behind it. We once started this project called One Star is Born. We wanted to redefine hotel classification, really challenge it. You know, why does a five-star hotel, deserves five-star prizes and a one-star hotel, one-star prizes? And we're honoring that start of the company, and we want to become another star. But now, we want to become another star in, the management and the ownership of the fantastic Citizen M locations.
Yeah, I mean, definitely makes sense when you hear it that way. And as you say, it's highly competitive market out there, and definitely wanted to speak a bit more about distribution a bit later in the podcast. But Citizen M has always been very strong, of course, in their brand and positioning, always kind of thought-provoking, especially in the early years of the brand, and reinventing a lot, as you mentioned already. For you now, going into the new era, having sold the brand and therefore also quite a lot of agency to Marriott, who can now, and that's a question, decide a lot more, of course, about how the brand also evolves. How do you look at it now as being, the CEO of another star, the sole at the moment and biggest operator of Citizen M worldwide? What are the kind of key Citizen M DNA which you feel must stay protected? And how did you also have these conversations with Marriott about the view from them about Citizen M and the brand itself in the larger portfolio of Marriott brands?
Yeah, that's a good question. I get that a lot. A lot of guests are concerned about this, but Marriott did not spend the amount of money they spent to change the brand or to, they brought a strong brand, and that's why they're, paying the money that they paid. So they don't have a real incentive to change the brand. If you think about, you said it in your opening of your question, like those early days, that's when we started the brand, but the brand hasn't really changed, right? The brand's always, evolved around the same principles, and, we just build it out. And if you think about all the innovation that came with it, that innovation can continue. We still own and operate these hotels. Like, if we want to do things smarter, if we want to use more technology so we can make the customer experience more human, we will do so. And we are not solely relying on Marriott in it, even though Marriott has a big program as well that they're rolling out that is actually helping us to do so. And so Marriott is always going to make some changes to the brand, just like we've done ourselves. They might make decisions for future hotels that we also would have made ourselves. When we started, we didn't have meeting rooms, we didn't have cloud bars, we didn't have swimming pools. Those were all introduced later. We've had a couple of different, generation of rooms. So I think that will continue, but the brand ethos by itself is something that is going to go into, a vault as well within Marriott, and it's going to be, tough to change that.
So what you're saying, if I understand correctly, actually, now you give over this development of the brand to Marriott at this also with a very successful brand which you've built, and you with another star focusing much more on the elements which you feel you can make the biggest change in, and this is kind of very strong guest centricity, technology enabled. And looking at growing in this side and having as a USP for another star.
Yeah, absolutely. And those things have always been disconnected, and they will just stay disconnected. And I think that was my point. Like, the innovation never really came from the brand. Innovation came from, human-centric thinking and, technology, technology being a core part of solving, some of these issues.
In your time, you, of course, were part of the founding and the initial days of Citizen M and been there for a long journey. You also had a little stint then going out of Citizen M, going to Planet as president of hospitality there. How come did you take the decision to kind of, change sides, if you may say, and, what actually did you miss most about being on the operational side to move back to CitizenM?
Yeah, when I left CitizenM in 2022, you know, we came with a boom out of COVID, right? All of our hotels were open, operational. We have actually made them better, you know, a better technology stack, subscriptions, you know, full-blown app. So at some point, you need to ask yourself the question, when is my work done? And I thought my work with CitizenM was, you know, done in 2022. And I wanted to make an impact on the bigger industry. And if you want to do that, sitting on the technology side, it's the best way to do it. And I've really seen it myself at CitizenM. And every time I travel to other hotels, and it's a bit generalizing, but, you know, I didn't get that same feeling of, hey, this is a technology-led operation where things are made easier for me. And with Planet, I saw that opportunity. You know, it was a company where a couple of different elements were brought together. And so software with PMS, payments, you know, its own, you know, payment systems. And I've always, you know, been an admirer on the payment side of the potential that is there and that has not been exploited by hotels. So I wanted to, go to a place where you could make an impact on an entire hospitality industry. And to be honest, what I missed most is this, you know, being in the garage on a daily basis, trying to, you know, solve for those 40 hotels, you know, that rhythm and, you know, seeing the real results. Because as a technology supplier, you can offer technology to hotels and you can advise them, you can be passionate and you can write articles and you can go do keynotes about how the hotel industry should be behaving, but no one needs to listen to you. Right. So it's everybody's own decision if they want to be, you know, smart with technology or not. And so I think I've booked some real successes, you know, during my time at Planet. But at the same time, I kept being passionate about CitizenM as well. You know, when you leave a company, sometimes you get these calls from investors or potential investors and they ask you about it. And they've always, you know, given me that mirror. It's like you are so passionate about CitizenM still, you know, and that I stayed in it every week in London. And that also, you know, made it simple for me to reconsider to come back.
Yeah, I definitely understand what you're talking about. And coming back as CEO, or first as CCO and then as CEO, you had a massive tech project as well, right? Or in general, an integration project, which is much more than technology, of course. The sale of the brand to Marriott, in a lot of cases or typically, is quite a lengthy process to then actually integrate the whole technology stack, the whole processes, and be connected to this huge Marsha and Bonvoy and all of these elements. But you guys did this in rapid speed, right? From the announcement of the sale to the actual integration, please correct me if I'm wrong, but it was not more than half a year to 9 months in that sense, on having a project completion. What were the prerequisites before to be able to enable this? And what were the most important levers you had to pull or focus on to make this successful?
Well, as our old CIO, Mike Rawson, used to say, this is about people, process, and technology. And I think at CitizenM, we had that in place, right? So we actually finished it within 4 months because, yeah, you can do it all preparation. But before you close, you cannot really, you know, do much. So we closed on the 23rd of July in 2025. And before the end of November, all hotels were, you know, live, which was a complete record as well for Marriott for any new integrations. And it's really those three things. So we had the right people. We had the right technology platforms. So there was no legacy, whether it is Apaleo, whether it is Adyen, our own middleware, I reckon, we had all of the ingredients in the technology to be able to do this. Then we had enough time, a couple of months, to prepare, you know, for the for the process. And I would say on the Marriott side, let's give those guys, you know, kudos as well. You know, they've been seen as dinosaurs a lot, but, you know, they managed to pull it on their side. There were 80 to 100 people involved in this technology integration, and it was really that was really a great partnership. So on the people side, it also really worked well together.
Yeah, tell me about that, because I can imagine, you know, CitizenM, you know, more of course, lean operations, lean teams to a certain extent, and then Marriott, of course, being more on the larger scale. So how did this go from a, you know, what you can are allowed to share, but on the people side in this project or in the conversations, from a smaller player joining a big ship on that side?
Well, I think the big difference here is that, you know, we were integrating to Marriott, right? So they have their specs, and we were, you know, writing to their specs, and we were building the technology that would connect, you know, our hotel management platform to Marsha, to Bonvoy. And so we were building the connector, and they were the ones enabling it and making sure that we've understood everything, facilitating us, certifying everything, of course. So that makes a big difference. So if it would have been the other way around, it could have had the same outcome. But for us, it felt like we were in control of the process, you know, throughout the entire period. So I think that made a big difference. Mm-hmm. Plus, of course, you have platforms, you know, that allow you to do it, right? If you need to go to vendors and ask them, you know, can you please, you know, work for the next couple of months in X, Y, and Z? And there's a big vendor with legacy technology, and they don't have the roadmap to do it. They don't have the capacity to do it. Yeah, then you're waiting on it. And this is, I think, where, you know, you see sometimes the technology integrations not go so smooth, because there's too many dependencies. And with us, we didn't have so many dependencies. We could just execute.
Mm-hmm. So this is where you actually say you're tech-enabled, tech-forward setup as well, allowed you to not be a risk for joining a large brand, but actually being the big advantage that you guys could just act much faster and easier.
Absolutely.
Looking out, you know, into the future, you mentioned as well, you know, OTAs being quite a challenge. With having much more offering on there. There's, of course, other trends, which I also want to elaborate with you, is the change of maybe potential booking patterns, like who books how, you know, with AI search coming up. And used it already, AI plays a big role for you as an operator already today. And also for the future, you know, for yourself as being CEO of another star, but also coming back from a larger tech company, how do you evaluate, you know, technology, or how do you look at technology in general, and look at them as future-proof in the age of AI?
Well, it's quite a wide question, but let me narrow it down for us. So I think technology, I mean, you have some certain things that you need to do, right? So providing Wi-Fi in the hotels is really core technology, and it's technology for technology. And even there, you can make things, you can do things a little different. But for us, technology has always been an enabler of something else, right? And it will continue to be so. So I'll give you the example, because, you know, AI, you know, being part of technology, You really need to know what you're trying to accomplish. And being a very centralized organization where every piece of work that it's not checking in, helping a guest check in, or serving a cappuccino or a cocktail in our organization is happening at a central place. And so a lot of the pain or manual work sticks out. And so, you know, that is where we will be focusing a lot. We've always done it. We've always had RPA processes. We've always automated charging of virtual credit cards, no-show processing, because it sticks out. And in a normal hotel, a lot of these processes are fixed at a front desk. You don't really see it as an owner. There's a front desk person, there's, you know, free front desk people standing there for 8-hour shifts, and they deal with stuff that falls off the bandwagon. Well, if you don't have a front desk and you don't have a front desk person, you start automating these things. And for that, you need technology. And that's just one example. But also on the customer side, if customer needs to wait for too long, it is a frustration. So we just touched upon efficiency. An improved customer experience is the second driver for me to think about technology. If somehow with us, you get a faster and a better and a more human answer than with the competitor, then I'm willing to invest in it. So those are for me two things. And the third one, of course, is cost, right? You need to, you know, keep a look at your P&L. And make very rational decisions when it comes to your technology spend. So we will always evaluate things across the triangle of the P&L impact, the impact on efficiencies. So that should be, you know, married to the P&L, and then the customer, but also the employee experience. So it cannot be that we come up with something smart, and then all of a sudden, these ambassadors that we call our frontline staff, they're having to work overtime to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. So, for you as a CEO, this is also really an important part of your business strategy, which you are also putting an emphasis on.
No, absolutely. Yeah. I think anyone that is in a leadership position, whether you're in hospitality industry or anywhere else, you cannot close your eyes for that. The technology is moving so rapidly right now. We've just gone through two decades of, you know, the internet revolution, and this revolution is coming much faster, and it's allowing you to do things smarter. And I think you need to make that connection. And a lot of people ask me in the past, like, why was CitizenM so innovative? And we just, you know, you keep looking at your own experience. Like, if you need to get something done and you're not using AI for it now, then you're not smarter than you were a couple of years ago. And everybody's using it. So why is your business not using it? Why are you not giving these capabilities to your guests, your customers? So I think, any CEO, any person in a leadership position should be considering, do I have the right technology, people, and process in place to start riding the wave?
Looking a bit into the crystal ball, where do you expect AI to have the most meaningful, you know, impact or change in terms of guest experience or revenue decisions on that side for hotels and hotel operators?
I think for the operators, it means that things can be done more efficient. So, you know, let's say the dumb work that had to be done back of house, that shouldn't be done anymore in a few years from now. That shouldn't be done today, but, you know, let's give ourselves a little bit of slack. In a few years from now, you should not have to take a piece of information from one system to the other system. Those swivel chair jobs, taking something from an Excel sheet, putting it into a PMS, taking a piece of an email and putting it into another system, mm-hmm. processing no-shows, processing customer requests that come in. Can I park my car in your hotel? You know, why do you need a human person to look at that? That should not be the case anymore. So for operators, it means efficiency. For the guest, it means getting back faster than what you used to. Answers on your queries right now. I mean, email hotel companies, see when you get an answer back. Probably human is needed, and that means a human needs to take a look at it, and that means the human needs the time to take a look at it. And so AI will take that friction away, so you'll get an answer much faster to questions that you have. And then I think the third thing, which is the most talked about topic in the hotel industry, is like, how do the bookings get in? How does that work? I think that's the biggest unknown yet. But if you just zoom out for a moment, you know, we used to call like a travel agent, right? I need to go to Tokyo. Never been to Tokyo. I don't know the hotels there. There was no internet. But a travel agent had that information. So the travel agent would say, I have these free hotels for you. The one is there, the other one is there. You know, this one is really liked by the customers, and they would make the booking for you. Then the OTAs came in, benefiting from the internet, and they made that really insightful. Like, oh, I can see now myself in Tokyo, and there was reviews, and this hotel is an 8.5, and that one a 9.0. I can look at it on a map. I can see the prices. I can make my own booking. And now there's AI. AI knows you, right? And you are different than me because you live in Berlin. Mm-hmm. I live in Valencia. I might like modern hotels. You might like other hotels. I might be a Bonvoy member. You might not be a Bonvoy member. You might be a Hotels.com reward member. So based on all that information and the prompt that you're going to give the AI, it's going to find a hotel for you. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure that, yeah, whatever suits you best is going to be booked. And I'm not so concerned that, you know, all of a sudden the OTAs are going to win this. I think it's the other way around. Right? I was booking my skiing holidays in Austria on a very homegrown booking engine that was only in German. I could hardly figure it out. But ChatGPT, with its operator functionality, early days this was half a year ago, and this goes fast, was able to book it for me. It figured out that hotel booking engine, and it, you know, kind of run in the background, and it showed me the process. It was going to the booking engine for the first time, was finding out how to navigate the calendar, and it's like, oh, this is this option. I can see this apartment is available. It's actually 100 euros cheaper than on booking.com. Shall I book it for you? Right? And I think that is going to, yeah, again, democratize, you know, the inventory and, yeah, the AI, you know, they will dominate, just like, you know, the OTAs dominated Google. AI will dominate, you know, where this is taking place. And I think we have a good chance as an industry that more and more is coming direct.
It's super interesting, your insights and take on that, because I think this big question is, okay, who's going to control the inventory? And is it, you know, the OTAs again, who are going to be there? But I think it's interesting point, which you just mentioned, is loyalty, where in the last few years, people said, okay, loyalty statuses and programs more are playing less and less of a role because there's an abundance of it. Maybe points have a bit of less of an importance. But now you, for example, mentioned as well, okay, with even, you know, ChatGPT, et cetera, if guests can easily add their loyalty to their search, and actually the search will completely be changed on that. Do you see that loyalty will play an even bigger role in, or loyalty schemes in the future? What's your take on that?
Yeah, I think they will continue to grow, because we've had an opinion about a couple of topics in the industry, like the GDSs are going to die. Well, they're still there. We had an opinion about loyalty programs with the coming of, like, the, you know, reviews and social media, instant, you know, benefits. You don't need loyalty program. But look at the facts. Loyalty programs have only been growing. If you look at the ADRs and, you know, profits that the big chains are delivering versus independent hotels, you know, we sold our brand over it to Marriott. So I'm a big believer that these loyalty programs that allow people to book into a curated set of hotels with benefits, with recognition, with upgrades, with, you know, the ability to take your families on a, like on a free holidays at the end of the year, whether it's for an airline or, you know, for a hotel company, it works the same way. You know, you take out friction, you give priority to those people that use you a lot, and you give them benefits from the, you know, the corporate use that they have for their private life. So I'm not seeing that changing, to be honest. And adding it to, you know, to AI is just, yeah, telling the AI your preferences, just like you want a modern hotel, or I want a hotel that's walking distance from X. You know, I want my points with Marriott. Right? Okay, well, you can only get your points if you book on Marriott.com, so that's where the AI will book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes total sense. In, you know, Europe, we still have a lot of smaller to mid-sized hotel groups, which are independently run. CitizenM has been definitely an outspoken one and really well-positioned one on the European and then also on a global scale. What's your view on independent brands and operators, especially more in a European base? Do you think that it will be difficult for these brands to stay competitive with all of these changes, and that we will see much more of these brands joining larger, typically US driven, but more of the large hotel chains like CitizenM did, for example. And we've seen multiple other moves like that already in the past few years.
Well, I think we've seen already a lot of moves, right? But it's, if you look at whether it's CitizenM or Ruby, a European player, you know, that got snatched up by IHG. I mean, everybody needs to make their own analysis, right? And every hotel is unique. You have a certain piece of real estate in a certain market, and you need to take a close look at that. And that's also within the CitizenM portfolio. Like, our hotel at Times Square, it's not too big, you know, 231 rooms. It is a very good location. It always runs over 90% to 95% occupancy at high rates. Think about the 15 square meter rooms that we sell there. Anyone can, you know, fill a hotel at Times Square, whether you do it through Booking.com, Expedia, or, you know, Marriott. So the impact of, you know, like a Marriott deal on a hotel like that is less than if you have a hotel, and I'll call one of the early success stories Rome, right? Rome has a lot of inventory, a lot of competition on Booking.com. You can fill the hotel, but yeah, if you're part of Marriott, all of a sudden, if you think about, you go to Rome Airport and you hear a lot of American. Americans go to Rome, right? And Americans like Marriott. And so the impact of Marriott on a hotel in Rome or Paris or London or Amsterdam is pretty big. Yeah, and then if you go to secondary cities in the US, where it's, you know, mainly US free nights a week business travelers, you know, Austin or Chicago, yeah, if you're part of the points programs, and yeah, they consider you. If you don't, yeah, then you get to deal with, you know, Booking.com and Expedia demand, but that's not enough to generate ADR, and there's quite a differential there. So it's really depending, and now I'm talking about a few CitizenM locations, but if you are, I don't know, if I would have a 100-room hotel in Austria at a very popular ski destination, would I then benefit of, you know, being part of Marriott? Maybe, maybe not. You know, people will find me on the map. If, when there's snow, people, you know, will come to me. When there's no snow, not. If you are in a tertiary, you know, German location somewhere in a business district and you have 100-room, you know, I'll give you the example in Dortmund where there was a big Protel, you know, Planet office. Yeah. The reason that people stay at a hotel is not because they get points. The reason it stays is because they have an office next door. Mm-hmm. Right? So your demand is literally around you. And if the offices are not open, yeah, forget about it. You don't have any demand, but you're not going to solve that, you know, with the big distribution play. So I think everyone, you know, needs to make its own, yeah, evaluation, of course. But yeah, if you're in the big cities of the world, you know, relying on international travelers, it's absolutely worth considering.
What's next for Another Star? You had an eventful last year. Now just, you know, now starting fresh, if I may say. What's next for you guys?
Well, I think the first thing, I mean, what's really next, we don't know yet. We first want to, what we say internally, consume our marriage with Marriott, right? So we've done everything to integrate. There's still bits of open points on the integration. So we have a day one, day two, and day three. We've completed day one. Everything is live. You can get the points. You can book. Marriott's taking over all the consumer side of technology, but then there's some other stuff to do. So there's still some work to be done. But for us, it's really to see now what is the impact of the Bonvoy machine on the, you know, the 37 hotels that we own and manage. And then from there, we'll we'll take new decisions, whether it's we're going to do, you know, more management agreements, like the one we're opening in London. We need to see. But first, we're just going to stabilize. We've had quite a turbulent year with a lot of restructuring, a lot of new North Stars, a new relationship. So now it's just time to let the dust settle, make the most out of it, and then let's see in 2027 what is next for another star.
I can imagine. It also takes always a bit of time to then settle in a new setting. We're also already getting to the last few questions of the podcast. And Leonard, thank you so much already here for your insights. Let's get a bit of your personal take, looking back into your years with CitizenM. You're closing a chapter, opening an exciting new chapter. Can you tell us, like, what is maybe your most proud moment or the part which you're most proud about in your time with CitizenM or at CitizenM?
Oh, there were so many. I think I must say, when we opened our first American hotel, it was in was Times Square in the early days. That was, in the background, such a difficult exercise. A bunch of Dutch people opening a hotel, digging a hole, on the location in Manhattan, dealing with all the constraints that come with construction in Manhattan. Then opening it and, you know, running 95% occupancy at a rate over $300 in the first month. That was a moment where I thought, wow, you know, we pulled it off. And that was, you know, straight after that, we had the Tower of London, like on the UNESCO World Heritage site. The amount of permissions we had to get to open that hotel, like even Londoners are asking us till today, like, how on earth did you managed to get that hotel, get it approved, get it built, and get it opened. And every time I'm at the hotel and you're looking over the Tower of London, yeah, that makes you proud of the team that accomplished.
Yeah, I can imagine that's quite some projects. I mean, you guys made it to the US, but never to Germany.
yeah, that has different reasons.
Yes, yes. Maybe one, last close-up question. Looking at, also the founding years, staying a bit reminiscing here. Is there one moment that makes you smile or gets you a bit sentimental when you think about your time with CitizenM or at CitizenM?
Sentimental, wow. If I think back about all the people, that were part of this journey, and I remember our first opening party with, a bunch of founders that were, literally 20 years younger than they are today. the excitement that we had, that we pulled it off, our first hotel at Schiphol Airport. We had a big tent outside. It was a big blast. And if I just think about all the names and all the faces and everyone that played a role and where we are today and how, proud everyone that participated in all those years is now, you can still see it and you can still touch it. It's not some kind of technology innovation that, came and then went again. It's still there. And whether you walk into Schiphol Airport, if you walk through the door, I always have to think about the box that is buried below the entrance. It's a time capsule that we as founders put in when we put the first pole into the ground. And then I think about the names and the faces of those people. And that, that makes me humble to be allowed to continue, this journey as a leader. I'm not a sentimental guy, but you make me think about it now, and then I think, wow, yeah, that those were the days.
No, I have to say congratulations to you, but also to all of the other people involved behind the scenes and also part of the founding in the years. in my still relatively young hospitality career, CitizenM has always been from hotel school in Lausanne to my early entrepreneur years, and then also with Apaleo, of course, always been a great inspiration and a cool brand, which has really redefined, I think, a lot of parts of modern hospitality and business hotels and how to approach that. So I think, you guys have done a tremendous job, and really excited to see what's, the next chapter with another star and how this will continue. We can't finish our episode with our game Book by Bulldoze, where I name you three different hotel brands and you need to decide which one you would actually book, buy, or bulldoze. Leonard, are you up for it?
Absolutely.
Perfect. So here are the three brands: Yotel, Oyo, and Henna Hotels. Do you know all three hotels brands?
I know Oyo. I know Yotel. I'm just Googling Henna.
It's robot receptionists from Japan.
Wow, this is difficult, guys.
We're putting you on the spot.
You're putting me on the spot. In that case, I would buy Yotel and make it CitizenM's. Right, I would. That's an easy conversion opportunity. I would book Henna. I mean, the name rang a bell. Was like, but it's from like a long time ago. So I would love to experience. I would love to experience Japan, and I would bulldoze Oyo. I've never seen the value of their business model.
Perfect. Thanks so much for playing. It's definitely not an easy one.
You're welcome.
Leonard, thank you so much for joining on the podcast today. It's been a real pleasure, a lot of insights, looking forward to see what comes next.
Thanks for having me, Florian, and let's stay in touch.
That's it for this episode, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. Don't forget to share your thoughts on this episode and everything else that is going on at Smack with us by checking out our website at smack.media or connect with us on LinkedIn, YouTube, or Instagram. We'll see you next time.